It's time to begin our Bible study. We're going to start at the bottom of page 23 on the material, examining the qualities of those who are suited to be biblical leaders in local churches. Before we engage in our Bible study, let's go to the Heavenly Father in prayer. We had talked about the other qualities going down through number 11. Number 11 is one that we're not going to spend much time on in this class because it is expanded in the next lesson. This, I think, is better considered as part of the five special qualities that will be considered in a separate lesson. However, it's included here because it's one of those things that all Christian men should aspire to in their own homes. So that's why it's included in the list of the 18 that are qualities every Christian man should have. One that rules well his own house, having his children in subjection with all gravity. What you do not see in this text is the one that you see in the other list of qualities in Paul's pastoral epistles. And that is the one where the children are called believers. That will be considered later. This simply talks about one who has demonstrated that he can direct his own home in an orderly way, which is a good thing. I mean, it makes sense that he has his children in control, not that he's domineering or authoritarian, but rather that his authority is respected in the home. This doesn't mean that it's a perfect house where arguments don't occur. You know, you've heard the saying, if somebody tells you he's never had an argument with his wife, watch him, he'll lie about other things. Well, that may be the same thing with regard to raising children. If someone says that his or her children are perfect and never do anything wrong, I'd say watch them about lying on other things too. The fact is that disagreements always occur when human beings are together in a relationship. But at the end of the day, it is recognized that he's the leader in the home, and not only recognized by the family that this is the case, but also recognized by those who observe the family, who are acquainted with it. They realize that he directs the home and that the other members of the family have respect and regard for his leadership. Each of these qualities, and including the one that we will talk about later, demonstrates that if he is capable of directing a home in an orderly way, then he has proven himself, at least in terms of his capacity, to direct a larger family, which we need to consider local congregations as simply a much larger family. If he can do one, it indicates that he has the capacity to do the other. Now, in the absence of his proven leadership in his home, this person is not qualified to serve. The question may arise, well, what if he's come to the faith long after his family has grown and left home? And the answer to this is that he's failed to meet this qualification if his household was known to be disorderly. The question arises, but can't he be forgiven of raising his children in an improper way? Yes, he can be forgiven, but he's not met the qualification. And while it may be sad for him, and he's shown good character and capable of repenting and turning, he still has not met this qualification, and therefore would not be qualified or capable of serving. Sad and unfortunate, but true. Yes?
It harkens back to Samuel and the way he was a good man. He was an excellent man, a godly man. But that didn't change the fact that he didn't rule his house well.
No, he did not. Even the worldly among the people of Israel challenged him on the raising of his sons. They're not walking in your ways, is what they were charging Samuel with. And one wonders if that wasn't a pattern that maybe Samuel learned in the house where he grew up. He grew up in Eli's house. And what was said about Eli's sons, Phinehas and Hophni? The same thing. You know, Eli, you don't know how to raise your kids. Look at the problems they're causing. So one needs to establish a pattern of governing his own household well. One of my dearest friends in Western Pennsylvania is so active. I mean, he's involved with every Bible study that takes place. He's always Johnny on the spot. If there's a work project that needs to be done, he's kind and generous. He visits. He and his wife are constant in their visiting. But he recognizes, and he's lamented to me often over the years, he recognizes that he's not qualified to serve as an elder or a deacon, because when he came to the faith, his children were grown and leaving home. And they were known in the community as being troublemakers and disobedient to their parents. And so he acknowledges, I'll never be qualified to serve. But he says, I'll serve in these other capacities. You see, we sometimes think, but that's not fair. And since we think it's not fair, it ought to be changed to accommodate our standard of fairness. I may have told you the story about a quite famous golfer. He was a fellow who was considered the best in the land for a long, long time. Byron Nelson. He was born and raised in Texas. And when he was a child, he had contracted rheumatic fever. And one of the byproducts of that was when he grew up, he could not father children. He is a member of the church in Texas. And when he wanted to walk in his father's footsteps and serve as an elder in the congregation. But he recognized that because he had no children, he and his wife had no children, that he was not qualified to serve as an elder. So he volunteered his time. Now understand, this fellow was a professional golfer. He was quite wealthy and so forth. But understand that he volunteered his time until he was too aged to be able to do it anymore, to be the janitor for the local church building where he attended. He found some way to exercise his service and his desire to help the other disciples. Some way that he could accomplish it. He was humble and honorable enough to respect what the Bible says and not attempt to circumvent what the Scriptures have to say. And so he found a way to serve. That may be the case for us as well. We may discover that we simply are not going to meet these qualities. That being the case, it's not, oh, I just give up then because I can't be an elder, so I'm not going to bother. Find an area in which you can serve and seek to excel in that area. Any discussion about this? Yes.
Proverbs as a general, they're there to tell you, all things being equal, this is kind of the way it's going to work out most of the time.
Yeah.
And I see that God works that way in a lot of things with man. You would think that a man that has the ability to rule his house well, however he doesn't have a house to rule, that kind of goes into play. God says, you know, hey, it's kind of one-sided, but this is the way it is. We're not going to go down that road.
Yes, that's a good point. In fact, it was Solomon himself who said in the book of Ecclesiastes, the race is not always to the swift, nor the prize to the one who is wise. His point is that time and chance happens to all of us. You know, some things in our lives are a product of our own efforts or our own failure to make an effort. Sometimes things are a product in our lives because of the help and the benevolence of others, and sometimes because of the harm or the sins of others bring product and effect in our lives. And then sometimes it's chance. Randomness. The randomness of genetics, or the randomness of a natural disaster, or the randomness of a disease process passing through a community. Byron Nelson didn't expect at the age of 8 to contract the fever and not be able to be a father. But it happened, and he found a means of serving the Lord in spite of it. Very good point. Yes?
Blank spot of that Judas Iscariot left, and they're choosing between Joseph, called Barsabbas, and Matthias. And they pray, and they talk about it, and they, you know, they clearly state what the expectations and qualifications, at least for an apostle, were. And long story short, Matthias was chosen, and not Joseph. Now, unless I'm mistaken, we don't know anything else that happened. We don't know past this point what happened to Joseph. My point is, just because he wasn't called to be an apostle doesn't mean he was not able to serve God.
In fact, there were many persons in the New Testament time that I read about their service and I say, why couldn't this one be an apostle? Epaphroditus is one. Barnabas is another one. You know, Barnabas, in fact, facilitated Paul working with the church of Jerusalem. And he was the one who got Paul started preaching at Antioch. Because when Barnabas was at Antioch in Acts 11, he realized this is a lot more work than I thought. So he goes and finds Saul, brings him to Antioch to help with the work. So why wasn't Barnabas an apostle? And the answer to that is, it's up to the Lord in those things. It's not up to us. We leave it to the Lord and the way he's arranged this world. It may be a matter of timing in Barnabas' case, or Epaphroditus, or some others. Just because God made an exception in the case of the Apostle Paul and made him an apostle out of due season, as he words it himself, doesn't mean that we can, by our sense of unfairness, say, well, others should be as well. Good discussion. Let's draw this one to a close, looking at C on page 24. One with, it should say with, a domineering wife or unruly children is not elder material. Just off the cuff, can someone think of why someone with unruly children would be unsuited? How would that impact his service as an elder in a local church if his children are unruly? What would be the impact?
Well, that's an example that he said before. If he can't help guide and discipline and encourage and whatever it takes with his own household, that's just a natural step of progression to do it with others.
Right.
And others would be pointing back, well, if he can't control his kids, you know, maybe I don't have to do so good.
That's one of the side effects to be considered. I would suggest that another one would be if it would call into question his capacity to lead, and it would always be an issue. It would always be a point of contention in the local church. And the fact of the matter is, we need to eliminate as many points of contention that are within our power to do so. Yes?
Nor would he be above reproach.
Because he did not do well in raising his children. Very good. That's why we said last week there's so much crossover and overlap with these qualities. Good answers. How about domineering wife? How would that impact his leadership? There are multiple ways in which this could happen. One would be just what we've already talked about, the example that he sets and so forth. It would be a point of contention. It would also call into question his objectivity. That is he involved making the decisions with the other elders based on what his convictions are or based upon what his wife tells him that his convictions are? Larry.
She's supposed to be faithful in all things. And if she's dominating in the household, she would not be exercising rule. So there's an issue with the wife. And part of the husband, he's supposed to be the head of the household. So he needs to be sure that everybody is fulfilling the function of the role that God has placed them upon him in the home. And that would be one of the qualities of a good leadership.
That's a good point. One of the things that you'll probably see, especially when we get to the special qualifications in the next lesson, is that some of these things, we may look at them askance. That sort of offends our American sensibilities because we've been trained by our culture and society to have a different viewpoint of the roles and relationships between men and women and parents and children and so forth. And it's evolving as we speak and not in a good direction. What we have to understand is that the Lord has been around a whole lot longer than this world has, a lot longer than human beings have been, and much, much, much longer than American values have. Please understand that the biblical teaching trumps anything that we believe is fair based on our understanding. Jim, you were going to comment.
I was going to say that I have two domineering wives. I have personally seen where...
Be careful. You're married to Alyssa now.
Well, no, but I won't name names, but I remember I personally saw where the elder really wasn't an elder. It was his wife, an elderette.
Yeah.
And it looked all... The majority of his decisions were her decisions, and it caused a tremendous amount of strife, and it led to this, you know, at least at that time, the eldership dissolved completely.
While it is fortunate that those kind of situations are not common, they are tragic when they occur. Ron.
There's a reason that he must be married to be an elder. And the wife has an extremely, to me, an important role to play in that. If she's not supportive of what he does, even though, you know, they say, well, he's making all the decisions, but if she's not supportive of that, he will never make a good elder. And I've, over the years, that's one of the things, from the very early on, I've talked with elders, and that's one of the things that I'll bring up. Eventually, as I get to know them and everything, how important is it, you being an elder, the role that your wife plays? And almost invariably, the elders to me that stand out and say, I couldn't do this without her. Now, is she dominant in any way? No. You know what I'm saying? But they said, I couldn't do that without her. So I think we need to be real careful when we're talking about men. I think we need to be looking at the wife very closely. How she did the sport. And I've seen some excellent elder wives over the years. And, you know, they didn't stand out doing a lot, but they were just their role that they played, I knew why he was a good elder. It was because of her. And I just don't see that ever happening to a man being qualified elder unless his wife, she understands her role, how she's going to play, how she's going to support him in that role that he's about to take on. An extremely important work. Without her, I just think sometimes we just kind of, well, you know, she needs to be over to the side. He makes those decisions anyway. You know, they talk. And her help with other women in the congregation when he has to deal with, I've seen that come into play. It was like extremely important. I didn't do it without her.
There is a reason. I'll go ahead.
I just say, you can't do the work without a good wife.
There is a reason why, and if you read carefully, there's a reason why the New Testament also supplies a list of qualifications for the wives of elders. Read it. It's there. And to carry that just a little bit further, if he cannot or is unwilling to communicate with her, then it is a testimony that he cannot communicate with the congregation he's leading. If he's distant and unwilling to communicate with those with whom he's had a relationship, then he cannot be trusted to be communicative with those he's aspiring to lead in a relationship. Good point. Yes?
I think that her not being domineering is really important in the fact that she may overhear something, but she's not to make it her business to know what's going on with other members of the church or to go and seek to find out about other people or to talk about other people. So that's a big part of it, because if she thinks it's her job to make sure he's informed, she's not doing what she needs to do. She's being domineering and taking on the work herself.
Let me embarrass her a little bit by saying something good. I served as an elder for 15 years, and in the entire time, I don't remember a single occasion where she would come to me and say, so-and-so said. In fact, I do remember people coming to me and saying, your wife wouldn't talk about, right, thank you. That's the right way to do it. There is the expectation that the elder's wife is his lieutenant, so if you have an issue, complain to her and she'll take care of it. I'm proud of the way she handled herself in being unwilling to be involved in that aspect. And conversely as well, people would come to her and talk to her about something that the elders did, and she would be the last person to know. Why? Because I didn't talk with her about what took place in the elders' meetings. There are matters that deal with the spiritual well-being of individual disciples, and we must respect their privacy and not talk about it with others. If we do, we are in clear violation of Jesus' instructions in Matthew 18, 15 to 17. I appreciate that. Let's move on to the next point. Good testimony from them that are without. And this is also a bit of a crossover with the blameless and one other one that we mentioned in the last class. That means he must have a good reputation with those outside of the church. If he's in business locally, folks have respect for him as an honest business person. They know that he's going to conduct business in a respectable and honorable way. If he's involved in a local community effort, civil government, he is respected because he's honest, not only in the electioneering to get chosen during the campaign, but also in the discharge of his duties, does not play favorites. Folks in the community will speak well of such a person. Does this mean everyone's going to? No. There's always going to be someone who has a complaint. But that simply because someone has a complaint doesn't necessarily mean that he's not of good testimony from those who are without. This is talking about the cumulative account of his work and not talking about every specific account. Some of the very best persons you know are going to find some, you'll be able to find someone who has an issue with them. When a person has demonstrated a pattern of good works and there's a naysayer or somebody gainsaying about such a person, take the approach that the issue is more with the gainsayer than it is with the person they're charging. Notice what point B says, and I can't emphasize this enough on this point. A local church can only accomplish good with a good reputation. And therefore, the church's reputation and influence is often impacted by the elders' good influence in the community. I have worked with congregations that did not have elders in the past. One of the things I encountered in the community when I would do door knocking or canvassing, trying to find someone to teach, I would mention, well, I'm the evangelist for this congregation. Oh, doesn't what's his name go there? Yeah, he's a member there. I don't want to be a part of that group. You see the impact in the community. Now imagine how exacerbated that would be if it was one of the elders or one of the deacons or someone who is seen in a position of leadership in the local church. We have to be careful about that. The next one, not self-willed. This one, I have personal experience with. On one occasion, I had the unpleasant experience of witnessing an elder go, as I put it, rogue. He wanted to have special concessions for his family, apart from what would the other members would get, and became quite self-willed about the matter. It cannot be stubborn, headstrong, or self-pleasing, and expect to get along with others in the local church. When you have someone who is aspiring to serve as an elder, but his philosophy of life, my way or the highway, tell him to hit the highway. That's not somebody who's going to serve well as an elder in a local congregation. Needs to make decisions based upon what's good for all concerned and not on what he personally likes or dislikes. You know, in general, in Philippians, the second chapter, we recall the Apostle Paul teaching us, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. He says that to draw a conclusion to a discourse he had on interaction between disciples. In that discourse, he talked about, let's not please ourselves, but look out for the interest and well-being of others. I'm paraphrasing, of course. And that is that we don't always put what makes us happy or comfortable or our favorite things first, but consider what will best serve the Lord and the disciples who have been placed into my care. That has to be our priority when we serve as leaders in a local church. Not what I like, but what's in the best interest of the congregation. And it may be a decision that I wouldn't be comfortable with. Nevertheless, if it serves the Lord and is the best interest of the congregation, then I need to live with the discomfort. And so would anyone else serving as a leader. Any questions about this one or comments? The next one, not soon angry.